Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wierson, one of your hosts today, together with my co-host, Maggie Westfold. Thank you for joining us and listening in today.
Hello, I'm Maggie Westfold, co-host with Paul Wierson today. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. So this is my first try at reporting and co-hosting. I hope that's not too obvious as the show moves along. I'm enjoying this so much so far. Today we're going to hear about the households of Bethany, formerly Bethany Manor, a nursing home facility in Story City, where the residence activities program involves creativity of all sorts, which can become a spiritual experience of sorts for some, and also about construction and improvements going on around Story City.
Well, Maggie, welcome to the airwaves, and you're going to have fun. I guarantee that. You're going to have a lot of interesting experiences and meet interesting people. And speaking of interesting people, we have Mark Jackson here, who is city manager of Story City, and we thought it timely to bring him in because there's all kinds of stuff happening at Story City in a very short time frame, and I thought, how do we attack this? Well, I thought chronologically. Mark, welcome to the program, by the way. And so what I'm talking about here is probably starting with the whole cluster of things happening. I'm starting with the swimming pool. Now, when did that project start? That was about a year ago, wasn't it?
They actually started construction in the fall of 2015. We didn't have a pool for 1 year. A swimming pool loses money. So we actually saved $60,000 to $80,000 by not being open 1 year.
Of course, yes, of course. Now, the original swimming pool dates from when? Do you know the background on that, how long we had that first swimming pool?
I believe it was in the early 1970s, around 72, 74.
That's my memory, yeah.
It was built around the same time as the golf course was, so it was around that time, so it was about 1974.
And, of course, that would probably be typical for the life of a swimming pool from the early 70s to now.
About 30 years, yeah. You know, so we went a little bit longer, and it was well-maintained. We had, as you remember, a gentleman by the name of Maynard Olson, who helped maintain the mechanical part of the pool for that since the beginning of
that.
I
didn't know that, really.
So you have somebody like that, and then our current Parks and Recreation Director, John Moran, who's been there for over 20 years. So when you have that kind of longevity and knowledge, we really will make that pool probably last another 5 to 10 years beyond its useful life.
And then when you talked about the pool, there was for a moment, for at least, there was a discussion about another location. But that devolved back into doing the pool in the same location.
And right. It got into, which is not unusual in a lot of communities, don't build it in my backyard.
Right.
It was going to be built in a residential neighborhood, and the residents in that neighborhood didn't want it in that neighborhood. It would have been in the back of where what is now, you know, where the practice football field is, and back behind the elementary school. The residents in that neighborhood didn't want it in their neighborhood for various reasons. But the community as a whole wanted it in its current location, and I agree with that. It's you know, I wrote in my last column, it's part of the entryway into our community when you come in.
When it comes to entryways, in fact, once there was a guy who had his car towed into the gas station. And I said, oh, this is terrible. I was walking, and he said, yeah, I had my interstate trouble. And I rode with a tow truck. And you know, this is the most beautiful town in terms of an entryway that I've ever seen.
It is a pretty entrance into any into the community. And really, that pool, it's how it's built now, just really adds to that.
Well, you see, this guy, it was the worst day in his life, of course, because his car broke down. But he said, oh, the tennis courts, the golf course, the parks. This is wonderful. And it really is an entryway that just presents the city so favorably. But you were constricted on not having a bigger pool with the new pool, so you had to have the same area.
And it's not a big site, and it's a confining site to work in, and it doesn't make it easier. So it really helped having the architect that we had and the engineering firm that we had that knew how to design a pool of what we wanted it to entail with a really constricting site to work on.
Well, I just drove by yesterday. All kinds of people were on the water slides, and this could not even be believed in the 50s when I grew up. Story City would look like that. So that project went through. And now, I guess the next thing I'm thinking of is the South Park, because that's been completely renovated. Now, to people who don't know Story City, the main street, Broad, divides the park into the North and South Park.
Now, you know, they're Norwegians, so they're really innovative in their names. The South Park's on the south side of the road, and the North Park's on the north.
Yeah, you'd think...
Yeah, like that, you know? In case anybody's wondering.
You think the South Park would be called Kringla and the North Park Lutefisk.
Something different, but no, we keep it simple. But
I'm holding my tongue, guys. I'm not Norwegian. I'm married to Norwegian, and I've been hearing this stuff for so long.
Well, the South Park was very rustic. And it had two WPA projects. For those who were younger, the Works Progress Administration was the Roosevelt era attempt to put people to work with subsidized government money. And boy, in the art world, if you go to Callanan Middle School in Des Moines, there's a beautiful mural. Here at the Ames Post Office, there's a beautiful mural that comes from the WPA. But the bulk was construction and improvement like we had in the South Park. First of all, a shelter and the swinging bridge. We're very famous for that in Story City, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting is, and part of it went back to our visioning strategic planning process that we did a number of years ago. And what people wanted to see is an enhancement to both the North and South Parks. And the North Park's going to start this fall. But in the South Park, it was interesting because, as you said, it's kind of very rustic. It was an old WPA project that was enclosed. Mm. And so when we made the decision to do that, we opened up that shelter but maintained the stonework that was there and the fireplace, the real foundation of all of that. And it's interesting. You heard from a number of Paul Worson-aged long-term individuals in the community wondering why the city was spending money in a park that nobody would use.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Fascinating. I mean, you just kind of shake your head and, you know, it's – But you see that park now used, and it's not just the shelter. It's the trails that went in there, the overlook areas, and you see people in that park all the time. And so it's that sort of, yeah, it wasn't used before, but if it's repurposed in a way that can be used, people will use it. And it's because the river runs through it, the South Skunk River, just really adds a lot to that whole area.
Right, and you have the little waterfall, the babbling brook type effect. And then you have... You know, it is good how the shelter was handled, because that was an enclosure featuring logs and various attitudes to make the walls. And that was taken out, but the stonework was left, and it opened it up. And you put in some picnic facilities that are marvelous. Also, a lot of sidewalks that curve through the areas, which really improves your handicap access. And then, of course, the swinging bridge is a perennial thing that's really been improved upon, too, because was it Dave Anderson who put in the lights?
I think you're correct, yes.
And he did that just sort of as a volunteer project. So the swinging bridge is lit at night. That's beautiful. But the South Park, in my memory, was the next sequence. And now you say we're doing the North Park beginning in August.
Yeah, North Park is we're doing that in about three phases, and we're doing a major part of the phase this year with a real refurbishing of the tennis courts. But really what we're really focusing on with that one is up around the carousel and really enhancing that area around there, giving it more of a think of it as your house, that the carousel is the house. Mm-hmm. But in terms of an outdoor seating patio area, just refurbishing that whole area out there to make it more look like what your backyard would look like. So you can use that more and more rather than just for the carousel. Because what we see is weddings being used, and right next to that is the Fairview Lodge. And with the Fairview Lodge, I mean, that's rented like 180 days out of the year. And what we see there is a number of like wedding rehearsal dinners and things like that. So it's really to start enhancing that entire area.
Well, you know, what makes sense is what people do in terms of traffic patterns, where they walk naturally. Keeping in mind, too, that a lot of folks have mobility issues and are confined to wheelchairs. And
yeah, I hear that from Barb Froling all the time.
Yeah.
She's one of my former council members. And so in that North Park, we're also doing walking trails and things like that. So individuals of advanced years can also walk through the parks as well, because it is rather difficult.
Well, you know, the thing is, when I look at the North Park, since my youth, it's really been vastly improved. In fact, the tennis courts in the lower area, that's where we practice football. I left a lot of sweat on that area. And I remember we'd gather on the hill where the carousel is now. And that was a situation where we just sit there on that hill, and now that's where the carousel is.
Yes.
And basically, what you're talking about, and I've actually seen the drawings, you know, I think probably, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, that it looked pretty impressive. And also, it doesn't alter things a great deal, but it still enhances what the park is.
Correct.
And the other thing, of course, is the extensive, very popular today to talk about infrastructure.
Yes.
When it comes to Story City's infrastructure.
President Trump got his idea from me.
Yeah, that's right. Of course it came
from. That major infrastructure bill really originated with me in Story City.
I think that's true because all of Eastern Story City is a construction zone.
Exactly.
And tell me, Mark, what's happening there? Because everyone's saying, I found out the world's round because you start west and go east. And eventually you get to where you want to go. But it seems like the whole east side is all the streets are torn up and everything. Tell me what's happening there for my sanity.
Well, we're doing this year we're doing some major infrastructure improvements. In particular, it's starting as phase one on that east side, as you mentioned, on Broad Street. And once that's done, then in early August.
That's the main drag, Broad Street.
The Broad Street is the main thoroughfare into the community. Now, once that part's done, Paul, and then we're moving to the west side in early August, and that'll run through mid-September. And we'll be doing another segment of Broad Street as well. And then we're also replacing a lot of underground stuff, stormwater and sanitary sewer mains. But, you know, actually, Paul, what I have found the most entertaining, and when you're in my business, you learn to find the humor in all of this, is the struggle that people have had with road closure signs.
Yes.
It is amazing. We had an individual that I could share with you story. It's interesting what my police officers share. A couple of them are great. The individual decided to drive on the sidewalk because that was open, although the road was closed.
Drive on the sidewalk.
You drive on the sidewalk. Yes, or
do you call that
yes. I was in. It's interesting you mentioned that. I was in Ukraine a number of years ago, and in Kiev. And they were briefing me about what to expect, and somebody said, people drive on the sidewalks. And I'm thinking, geez, really? Okay, and swear to God, yeah, if there's traffic, you just drive on the sidewalk. And so I think these are Ukrainians or from Eastern Europe that are coming into Story City because they're driving on the sidewalks, or the guy that drives around the side, over the curb, and then back on the street and around the other side because his buddy at the golf course said that it was okay.
Yeah, there's all kinds of legends already about what barricades you can drive past and what you can't, you know. People are so entrepreneurial about their driving.
And so, they're used to their routine. And so, there comes a point where in order to encourage it, I think what it is we really need to go into the signing business. I mean, we really do need more creative signs because road closed doesn't really mean anything to people. But, you know, if you go through a road closure sign, it's illegal and your ticket is $195.
Right.
So I think really what you need, Paul, is we need signs that say $195 ticket, proceed ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I think people understand those sort of things.
Hit them in the pocketbook.
Yeah, right. The contractor said really in one, he goes, oh, you think this is the only community where people do stupid things? He said, this happens in all communities. And he said, we were in one. We put on the back of the road closed sign because people would drive through and see it was closed, turn around and come out. And on the back they had a sign that said, told you, stupid, the road was closed.
Yeah.
And he said people, you know, they chuckle and they understand those sort of things. And I think that we need a different kinds of signage today that people that can understand.
On the reverse side, I would say, don't you feel guilty?
No. They don't.
They don't feel guilty.
They don't feel guilty.
Did you guys know Thelmer Ford? He was a longtime resident of he was my husband's uncle. He lived to be, I believe, 100. Story City, everybody knew Thelmer. I'm surprised you don't, but he would have had so much to say about what you're saying. He would say, Of course I drove on the sidewalk. I go that way every day. They know I'm going to go through there. What is that silly sign about? And he was a wonderful, wonderful man.
It's just that people are used to their routine.
Sure.
And so it's, now that we have this detour going through the community, we actually are wondering, are people going to drive on Broad Street after this because they're so used to the detour and their new routine of how they get around town? It's just a fascinating thing.
Well, I think the main thing is that, and this probably points to why infrastructure decays in our country, because it's so easily procrastinated and it's so difficult politically. A water main broke in Des Moines, and then ancillary to the story, they're saying it was a pipe laid in 1890, So it's just very ancient infrastructure, and it's hard to get the money or the imagination or political motivation to do infrastructure, and you're doing it in one big dose here, aren't you?
Well, and it's interesting. That's kind of it's the art side to politics or management. We talk about this. When we redid sidewalks in the downtown area, we did them in phases, because rather than making everybody mad at one time, we said, well, let's just make certain areas downtown. Plus, we were special assessment, so why have everybody mad at you when you only have certain blocks mad at you at one time? But on this one, we decided to do it in one big project. And as you mentioned, and the real part of the reason that is because we're doing this as one bonding issue. And when you talk about infrastructure, the real key is costs. And interest rates, it's like they're giving you free money this day. I mean, our interest for all these projects that we bundled together, North Park, South, all this, we did as one bond, and our interest rate is 2.3%. And so that was a real key factor in why we're doing so much of what we're doing now is because we were paying off a significant bond, and interest rates were so low, and we had the bonding capacity to do it. So
really, a lot of communities and entities are failing to take advantage of the current structure of the interest rate for bonds.
Exactly.
You should be doing everything you can right now in this little window.
And then you also have to see is where contractors are right now, what's going on in the environment, because of two of these projects we have right now. We haven't talked about Home Avenue Extension for American Packaging and their expansion that's going on there. But the company that's doing two of our projects is out of Mason City. And they will tell you up in Mason City, you know what they're hearing right now up there? Crickets. There's nothing going on economic development-wise.
Really?
So when you see contractors from – they basically are in a geographic area that they work within.
Right.
And so when they're coming from outside their area, that means that it's slow up there. And so when you look at the number of bidders and what's going on in the market, and then you take interest rates, most of our projects came in significantly under budget. So it's a timing issue that goes with that as well.
So you're talking about – Story City being somewhat visionary and very good about placing this project in the context of interest rates and advantages for bond issues, and a lot of areas are not exploiting that.
Well, it's either vision, brilliance, or sometimes, Paul, it's just plain luck.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's sometimes, I'd like to sit here and take credit, and you know me, I will.
Yeah.
that it is all of that. But, really sometimes it just comes down to you hit things at the right time, but there is something to be said for, if you remember in 2008 and 10, those shovel-ready projects.
Right.
I mean, there was a great time. Again, we did a lot of stuff back then to at least be in the planning and thoughtful stage so that when these times do create themselves, you can take advantage of them.
Well, I think that's one of the great things about your town, Story City. They've been very fortunate to do good planning, and there seems to be a state of agreement in terms of what sort of things have priority. And we're at Story City very fortunate to have a real good mixture of fairly sizable employers. You have EBY Trailer and you have American Packaging. These have been good citizens and they've remained. And I think that the selection process is good. Out there on the east side, you have this industrial park sort of place where you have a major expansion in the past 10 years. And so that's very good because that really helps the base and it creates a need for more infrastructure. You have to put sewer and water out there.
I think it's a couple things. One is, we've had some great leadership over the years. And a lot of communities say that. But we were fortunate to have somebody like Rich Olive As a leader in our community.
Yeah, who passed away.
Who passed away last year and who for over 20 years was a leader, economic development. He was a real salesman for Story City. And so a lot of credit goes to him, or like Mike Jensen, who's been a longtime mayor. But, you know, it's also the it's the culture of a community. You know, I've done, you know, and I teach at, I do some teaching at Iowa State. And so I've done the scientific study and I've come to a conclusion. Towns are either goofy or they're not goofy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really simple. That's simple. It comes down to that. And Story City's not a goofy community.
Is that right?
No. And I think, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, John Klaus here in Ames, mm-hmm. you know, I'll tell you when, and this is a great example. I think he says this a lot. And when we were selling the hospital to Mary Greeley Medical Center, John was the attorney for Mary Greeley, and we had an attorney out of Newton. You know, and John said, you know, and this deal really took about an hour to do. And John said this. He said, you know, reasonable people can accomplish a great deal. And that always stuck with me. And I think that says about Story City. But I think it's what can be done in politics, whether at the local, state, or national level. Reasonable people can accomplish a great deal. Unfortunately, today, I think, particularly at state and national level, we have a lot of unreasonable people.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah.
So, and a lot of people who just can't collaborate. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just all kinds of things that are symbolic where you take a stand and you're not flexible.
Yeah.
And that's the enemy of the idea of democracy, because obviously our founding fathers perceived that there would be conflict and disagreement, but compromise is the answer to that, and they realized that you have to set up avenues of compromise. Now, if people choose not to drive down those avenues, that's a problem, you know.
Yeah, drive down the sidewalk instead.
Yeah, right. That's a Story City.
Oh, I love that.
This is sort of that sort of brings it all back to actual practice, doesn't it? But I really think that when the dust clears and all the cement dries, that everyone will be very glad we did this infrastructure improvement in Story City. And I know that you get the phone calls and complaints, and people are saying, you're going to take out a tree. You know, and there's all kinds of things that come into play here.
Particularly ash trees.
Yes. And so basically, you're never going to make everybody happy, and you begin with that assumption, which is true of human nature everywhere. But as you say, in that town, the people who are reasonable tend to win out.
You know, when you mention that, real quickly, this is the time of year where I do a lot of baseball umpiring. From Little League,
I know, I've seen you.
Up to the high school level.
I do the PA for the high school baseball.
There's about 30, 40 games I do a year, and I remember umpiring is similar to being city manager when we talk about pleasing people, and I remember making a comment. It was after a close play at the plate, and I forgot the call I made, and I turned, and I told the crowd, I said, you know, my approval ratings will always be higher than the President of the United States, because half of you are going to agree with the call I made, and the other half are going to disagree with you. So I'm always at 50%.
That's right. That's better than a lot of
that's
presidents.
That's better than in city management sometimes or being President of the United States. I'm always at 50% in umpiring.
And rude to the person who expects to be at 80%. It's never going to happen.
At least in Story City, Iowa, you don't need to be escorted off by officials to keep your body safe. It's a wonderful town.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I think that, as Mark said, it's due to a bunch of folks who made decisions a long time ago, and to those more recently who made the city happen after a lot of transition time. When I grew up in the 50s, every Saturday night was like Scandinavian days. Mm-hmm. You could not find a parking place, and there was a concert. I'll tell you, I was in the high school band. We had to have band all summer because we had a concert every Saturday night where mosquitoes had a feast on French horn players. And what you had was a vibrant community with two men's clothing stores and two hardware stores, three drug stores, three grocery stores. Well, we're all aware of the population shift and the changes in Iowa, and Story City is somewhat immune to that because we're part of the golden circle of Ames, Ankeny, Des Moines. But it's not just that. It's not just geography and proximity to prosperity. It's also the people who made choices and what kind of things you do given the transition. We don't have three grocery stores anymore. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't matter because other things that have happened have offset that change to make the city continue to be vibrant and to make it a place where employers are anxious to be. And, man, do we have antique shops. I've noticed that. We have a lot of antique shops downtown. And, you know, Bethany Manor, Bethany Life Communities, we're going to be talking about that in the second segment. That's one of the largest employers in Story City.
I think it is the largest employer.
And it's creative, and they're doing new things. We'll talk about that later. But I really think that when you look at surrounding communities, and, of course, Susan Franson, who often does this show with me, we've done road trips. And a lot of good things are happening in a lot of communities. It's very heartening to see how people are saying, we're not going softly into that long night, you know, or good night, whatever the line is. And they do things that make their community still work, given the changes we have and changes of population and all that sort of thing. So Story City is right up there with the towns that are most capable of adjusting to demographic and other changes that really are part of life. And it's better to deal with those realistically and creatively than to give up and say, well, the town ain't what it used to be. So, and Mark, you're part of that. You're an imaginative person. You're also politically aware. And you're remarkably resilient.
Thank you.
So that's the kind of mixture, along with Mike Jensen, who happens to be my high school classmate, who has been mayor for a long time. And these are people who have endeared themselves in the community and who've handled controversy well in the end, when there has been. But I think that a lot of credit goes to you and the council and the people who, over time, Rich Olive, bless his heart, who did so much sales work to bring in community development here and economic growth. So it's just a real, I think, epitome of what a small town in Iowa should be doing in this time of change. And congratulations on taking advantage of low interest rates. That's a Norwegian trait. Don't spend a lot of money here. Lars, don't spend a lot of money. So good job. And we've been talking with Mark Jackson, a city manager of Story City. A lot of fun. And Mark, I'll be watching you do more, even more impressive things as time goes by. Mark Jackson, city manager of Story City. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay. KHOI Community Radio, and we're going to bring Maggie Westfold in because she is talking about another entity in Story City.
Thank you, Paul. Story City is the home of Households of Bethany, formerly known as Bethany Manor Nursing Home. This is a care facility for folks no longer able to stay in their homes, and some require medical treatment to be available to them at any time of the night or day, and it's a wonderful place. We have Molly Nagel with us today, and she has recently been employed as activities director there. Thank you for being here, Molly. We're going to talk about your interactions with the residents of Bethany and perhaps inherent connection and interweavings between creativity and spirituality. Molly's also a trained artist, and I've personally experienced her being in her studio. So I was fascinated when I heard that she was hired by Bethany as activities coordinator. And I wanted to share with you some of what she does, because she uses creativity to enrich lives in a special way. Molly, tell us what you do in your job at Bethany.
Oh, pleasure to be here. What I do at my job at Bethany is primarily activity and arts director, among other things, plan events, make sure that they have activities for the residents and things that they can do on their own. And among other things, then plan for artistic materials to be available to them, teach classes, teach people one-on-one in ways of using those materials. Oftentimes, I'm working with people in their 70s, 80s, 90s who really have not touched art supplies before in their lives. And it's really fascinating. One thing that I've found is an awful lot of people of this generation, especially people who grew up on farms, you didn't necessarily have an enormous amount of time for hobbies, especially arts, because that requires getting a lot of supplies. And the time just wasn't there, and oftentimes the money wasn't there. And it's really interesting from person to person. An awful lot of the time when I started out doing just contracting a few hours a week, I might get one person at a table to just try the watercolors a little. And a lot of people would sit around the table and go, oh, no, I'm not an artist. I'll sit and I'll watch because, you know, we'd have conversation while I was there. And I was totally fine with that. I don't believe in pushing things on people for any reason. But it was interesting. Exactly what I thought would happen kind of came true. Within a few weeks, everyone at the table was doing art with me. It became sort of that, you know, curiosity of, well, I guess maybe I can do it. And I try to make people feel very at home and go, you know, we're not working on, you know, masterpieces here. These are not going to be in any world famous museums. They, you know, if you don't like it, it's paper. Throw it away. If you do like it, take it back to your room and hang it up. We're not getting graded in this class. You know, I come in and say, hey, guys, do you want to paint today? And, you know, they've really done marvelous, marvelous works. Their children are just absolutely amazed because I'm asking, you know, oh, did your mom or dad do, you know, any artwork with you guys as kids growing up? And they go, no, we never saw them touch colored pencils. We never saw them draw. We never saw them paint. And they very clearly have an aptitude for it.
Your art background definitely has affected your choice of activities with your residents there. And you're...
Oh, absolutely.
You're seeing things in those people. You're affecting them as they realize things about what maybe is in them. Things are coming out in the way of experiences, and they see it on the paper when they create, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they surprise themselves quite often in the work that they're able to do. I have a running joke with one lady in particular who, she was one that took a little longer to get into it, but every time we paint together, she does a wonderful job. And I tell her that because, you know, you should tell people the truth that she's doing a wonderful job. And she usually shakes her head and says, you know, oh, but I'm not an artist. And I keep telling her, hon, every time we sit down together, you do beautiful work. And so I have this feeling you might not be telling me the whole truth about, you know, this whole not being an artist thing. And we usually have a good laugh over that.
Have you had some experience watching a man discover that he has the side of...
You know, it's interesting. And I think, you know, maybe this is a guy thing because it seems like the younger age, there's no difference between boys and girls. They'll both jump right in and do everything. It seems like boys tend to, and I think this might be a cultural thing, drift away from the arts as they go on. Some of the men won't necessarily jump in on the painting and things. I think they become surprised then when I say, well, what other artistic things would you like to do? I can bring in model kits. We can sculpt. We can build birdhouses. What would you like to do? And then suddenly they're like, oh, wait, that counts. And then we can get into some interesting things from there that sometimes take off of the things that they did for a living.
Art and creativity, it's so many different things.
Oh, absolutely.
And people get stymied when you say art. But if you really broadly define art and creativity, it can be this, what I'm experiencing, because I've never done this before. And it has shown me something, maybe something in myself. I don't know where it's going to go, but I never did this before. And it's a wonderful feeling sometimes. It's a little scary. It's a realization in yourself. And you've kind of addressed that with your residents. And that's that touch on the spiritual side. We're hearing from the Households of Bethany, formerly known as Bethany Manor Nursing Home in Story City, and Molly Nagel, an artist who was recently hired at Bethany Manor as their activities director. Molly was touching on the way I personally see spirituality, her residents realizing in the midst of being maybe coerced a little bit by her to be creative.
I would say gently encouraged, maybe.
Yes.
Soft verb, you know.
But I love what you said about for a guy pulling out a kit or whatever he had any little bit of experience with in the past and didn't really look at it as creativity.
I think there's a perception in nursing homes that, well, this is the place I go. Excuse me saying it, says it's so morbid, but, oh, this is the place where I go to die. And we really try to be anything but that at Households of Bethany. We feel like this is the place where you come and start the next chapter of your life. It's not about death. It's about a transition in life. It's simply starting another chapter of your life. And, of course, transitions, in a way, are always a mix of exciting, scary, and a little bit of apprehension, a little bit of what comes next. And we try to give people everything that they can to start that next chapter with some gusto. Mm-hmm. And we've had some really interesting things come about in that way. One thing we've added this year, for example, and this was partially inspired by my grandmother turns 99 next month. But my grandma has been an avid gardener her entire life. I joke that there was the Garden of Eden and then there was Grandma's garden. It mm-hmm. had been there about that long. So mm-hmm. you can see the outline of where it was. And so I knew that that was an interest with an awful lot of people of that generation. Later confirmed for me when I was bringing in seed catalogs and plant catalogs just as material to paint from. And I would have people at the table who didn't have an interest in painting, but they would read that seed catalog cover okay. to cover. Right. They were very interested in reading about every single variety of green beans and every single variety yeah. of tomatoes.
Yeah.
And so I approached our leadership and said, could we do garden beds? Every single household in our facility has its own outdoor space, a patio. Mm-hmm. And I said, could we do garden beds that are raised? They said yes. We got a really generous offer to pay for them through donations. And so every single household has a minimum of one. Multiple have several raised garden beds that are wheelchair accessible. They're growing their own vegetables out there. We've got tomatoes. We've got broccoli. We've got peppers. We've got cucumbers. We've got squash. That's interesting in a creative way, too, because they go and they look at them every single day. The plants get one freckle, and I find out about it. They love doing that.
Did they get to go plant that to start with? Did they help you plant?
Oh, yes, they did.
Okay, I call that playing in the dirt.
Right, and we have gloves for those who, have the nice manicure. And we specifically sat down before we got them with groups of people and said, what do you want in this garden? Because we'll, go and shop for them for you. And some people, of course, gave us, we just want tomatoes. And then others had the list of, I want Rutgers tomato, and I'm going to need Early Girl and Better Boy, and I'm going to need this type of bean. And we went out and got them exactly what they wanted to the best of our ability, had
Wonderful.
Them come out, help plant. We've been helping them lately, but they do 90% of the watering on their own. They really, really love it.
And they're creating life out there.
Yes.
Thank you for bringing that into this discussion. That's one of the most beautiful creations there is. Beautiful story there. This is Local Talk. I'm Maggie Westfold. We're hearing from the households of Bethany, formerly known as Bethany Manor Nursing Home in Story City, and Molly Nagel, an artist who was recently hired at Bethany Manor as their activities director. Molly, personally, do you experience a spiritual connection when you're creating your art?
I would say I definitely do. Spirituality for me broadly is simply, connection to that which is beyond yourself, whether that is the idea of time that came before you, time that came after you, individuals that come before or after you, things that are outside of the here and now and your own life. Mm-hmm. And when you create physical artwork in a way, I'm oddly conscious sometimes of the fact that this piece will very likely still be here after I'm gone. And I sometimes sit and wonder, in what form is that going to take? Is it going to be passed down generation by generation through somebody's family? Is it going to end up in a thrift shop? Is it going to end up in a museum someday? It's interesting to think about how artwork lives beyond you. And some pieces end up taking on a spiritual nature that you don't necessarily expect them to. You and I were talking earlier about one of the pieces in my studio that I did for my master's thesis at Iowa State.
Yes. May I give them a description of that?
Yep, just go ahead.
This is going to touch on my experience in Molly's studio. I walked into this huge studio, which is full of paintings on the wall, 3D art. Is that what you
three-dimensional sculptural art.
And on the wall is a huge elephant head. Huge thing that just looked at me and said hello. It's the most gorgeous thing, and I couldn't quit staring at that. That is gorgeous.
I decided I wanted to make something large, and I decided, well, go big or go home, and decided on elephant. And the elephant's made out of a framework of chicken wire that is attached to a wooden panel in the back, and then over top of the chicken wire is sculpted brown butcher block paper, but carefully enough to where it captures the wrinkles of skin and right. The wrinkles of an elephant. She's got eyes, she's got eyelashes, and then over the top of her I did an overlay in tissue paper of this kind of Rangoli styling you would see on sort of an Indian elephant dressed for festival. And I named that piece, The Nature of Memory. Elephants are known for having extremely long memories and being extraordinarily intelligent animals. There's a bit of a sadness to her in my mind. I think an awful lot of us celebrate the now, but you maybe look back with possibly a bit of sadness and nostalgia and just the overwhelmingness of the things that have come before you. You know, it's sort of like an extra consciousness or an extra idea has sort of implanted itself into the artwork that I didn't necessarily intend to be there, but I kind of welcome its presence when it does show up.
Now I'm back to what you talked about happening with the residents. When they experience this, it just comes to the forefront, totally unexpected. They're in the middle of enjoying themselves, even if just for half an hour.
Oh, yeah.
It's a memorable thing for them. I'm guessing that some of that really sticks for them. When they see you, something clicks because you gave them those moments.
You know, it's really interesting. We have three memory care units at Households of Bethany. We do have people with various degrees of memory loss. And it's interesting, even the ones who can't necessarily express themselves verbally anymore, quite a few will recognize who I am. You know, I'm fun to be around. I try to keep conversation going. I usually show up with something different and interesting. And creativity comes into my job, too, in the sense that I'm always going, what is a new experience that we can bring in? What's something new that we can give a shot to? Right around Easter, I gave a call to a friend of mine who runs a pet store, and I said, hey, can I rent a bunny from you for about 24 hours? And he was wonderful and said, oh, don't rent one. You can come and take a couple of them and keep them for as long as you need to make sure that your residents, you'll get the chance to enjoy them.
Awesome.
And so I brought these two, and man, he loaned me the two friendliest rabbits I have ever seen. I am a former 4-H kid, and I had never seen rabbits this stinking friendly before. I was almost, I brought them back to him eventually. I was like, these rabbits better get the best homes ever because holy cow. And I came into one resident's room who's bedbound but adores animals.
Right.
And I said, I've got a rabbit to show you. And I pulled out. She's like, anyone else who came into my room and said, I have a rabbit to show you, I would be going, yeah, right, of course, sure you do. Says, I'm starting to realize that when Molly walks in the room and says, I've got a rabbit, she has an actual rabbit. She's
rabbit.
Not messing with me.
Yeah, biggest compliment maybe you've ever received.
That's definitely among my top.
And we've been talking about the connections between creativity and spirituality. Molly, do you have a website or Facebook page you'd like to interject here?
My Facebook page is Upper Story Studio. I'm up in Story City. That's my actual studio. Now I'm available for bookings for private painting parties. I did a little girl's birthday party, and I've done bachelorette parties before. I've done showers before. I've done just random, hey, all my cousins and my sisters are in town this weekend, let's go ahead and paint together. Similar to wine and paint parties, you can bring your own food, you can bring your own spirits. I don't mind if you drink some wine, drink some beer, but you saw the stairs on the way in. You need to be able to get yourself safely down them on the way out. It is a 113-year-old building, and as such, it is not handicapped accessible. It does have a very steep set
it's
of stairs.
It's a hike up there, folks. Okay,
so this
thank
is your
you.
Studio up above a business place in Story City.
Yes, I am
and
located.
And you have the whole building.
And she lives
I don't have
up
the whole
there.
Building. I have roughly half of the building between.
I mean, the upper story, you have almost the whole.
Say
floor.
No, even of the upper story, there's more room up there than people think. I have the studio part is toward the back of the building. That's, if we've measured it right, roughly 1,200 square feet.
And can you interject here? Tell us how someone I don't know how long out of college you are, but for you to have your own art studio at your age is a dream for most artists. How'd that happen?
Okay, this is a really fun, interesting story, actually. I was looking for things to do after grad school. I had the terrible misfortune of graduating my undergrad degree right into the recession of 2008. So I only had a professional job for a few months before the company laid off pretty much everybody. They just could not afford to keep the doors open with all of their staff. So I ended up in a retail job just to make ends meet, decided to go back to graduate school. And at the end of graduate school, I was looking for careers. And an awful lot of people go into teaching. I was looking around, and all of the teaching degrees places I could find were either in states or cities where I said, no way, I just don't have no desire to go there, or were for things that I don't have enough experience in, like ceramics. I could muck my way through most of ceramics if I had to, but not enough to confidently teach it. And it just so happened at the same time, I happened to read several articles about people who had come across really interesting sort of work-life scenarios where, say, somebody had a farm or a building that was willed to them in another state. They didn't necessarily want to be there to deal with it, but was willing to say to this person, if you will maintain the building, you know, do something with it, make sure it doesn't fall apart, make sure it doesn't, you know, get broken into, you can basically live there for free. And I ended up reading so many similar stories, I went, okay, either I am somehow reading every story of this type that exists, or there are more opportunities like this than I think there are. And so I was also partially inspired by, back in the late 90s, the town my grandmother lives in up in North Iowa was a beautiful little town, but it was really being hit hard by, you know, sort of changing times, and most of the storefronts were empty. And the local chamber just started putting things up in empty windows just to make it look, you know, less sad and depressed. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, there are a lot of smaller communities in the area that I know have open, empty, you know, buildings that, you know, who knows, if I ask the right people, something might happen. So I basically put together a proposal and researched every town within about a half hour distance of Ames, because that's where I was living at the time, and came down to about four different towns that I thought could do some, you know, could maybe work. And I honestly did not expect to get into Story City, because on a drive through there were none of the open store windows and sort of closed up buildings you expect to see. But I got really, really lucky. I sent out emails to all of these communities, to various people, and it just so happened that the former chamber director, John Hall, was literally 2 weeks into his job and decided that I would be a really interesting addition to the community. He really, you know, went to work for me, called about a couple weeks later and said, hey, I've got a space that the landlord's interested in you. Could you come up and see it? It was in the building that I'm in right now, two possible spaces. I went into one a little bit on the small side, but I could make it work. And I remember the gal who is now my landlord, they eventually bought the building. We walked up to the second space, and she stopped and turned to me and said, we almost didn't show this to you. It is in very bad shape, but we'll show it anyway. And I think within 5 seconds of walking in, I said, this is perfect. This is wonderful. I can work with this. And they later admitted they thought I was certifiably insane because it was in very rough shape. If you go onto Upper Story Studios Facebook page and really dig back into the photos section, I have the original photos of what the space looked like.
Yeah.
It needed a lot of work, but the landlord at the time was more than willing to work with me. We had an agreement where he took on the cost to get a lot of the stuff that required professionals done, like new electrical work, new windows.
Wonderful.
And I took on the simple grunt work of hauling enormous amounts of things out to a dumpster and repainting and redoing things.
You have a dad.
And yes, and I will go ahead and say this too. My dad happened to be retiring at just that time. He retired just a few weeks earlier, and he and I are very similar in the sense that we have fairly good visioning skills. And he came in the first time, and, you know, he said that basically he was looking around and going, wow, this is a mess. But at the same time, he was going, but she's got a good eye. The bones are there, and this can work. And so he came up quite a few weekends with a few friends of his, and they ripped things out. They built things back up. They helped.
Friends. Wow.
Oh, yes. He even had some friends from the General Ames area. I love sitting down with those guys. They start telling stories, and there's no continuity air breaks at all between when they were kids all the way up through, you know, today. They've always been part of each other's lives. yeah, my dad called them and said, hey, I'm going to be in town. We should do something, and told them where the studio is. And the first time he came in to do things, within 10 minutes, those guys walked in the door with bags of tools and a sledgehammer and were ready to go.
You were a blessed artist. What you just described is not available to every young artist who wants their own studio.
There's something to be said for, you know, the traditional way of getting a studio is, you know, find a space, rent it. I went through it in a very non-traditional way, and I was very upfront with people, albeit in a try-to-finesse-the-words manner of saying, look, I'm a student. I'm a former student. I'm just getting out of school. I'm broke.
Yep.
But I am very hardworking. I am a good renter. I am a good person. I want to make it good for you. I want to make it good. And I've really improved the space, and I've tried to be a very solid member of the community as a whole, getting involved in anything I can that...
From everything I've heard, it has clicked on both sides. This has been a wonderful discussion. I've thoroughly enjoyed. We've been talking with Molly Nagel, an artist recently hired at the Households of Bethany as activities coordinator. We've been talking mostly about the inherent connection between creativity and spirituality. Thank you, Molly, for being with us today.
Thank you very much. I'd be happy to come back anytime.
And just reminding everyone that Molly is... proprietor of her own studio called...
Upper Story Studio in Story City, Iowa.
Yes, and you can find her up the stairs.
Up the stairs from PDG Printing. And again, also activities and arts coordinator at Households of Bethany. If you've not been up there in a while, we have a genuinely wonderful facility. And something a lot of people I don't think know quite yet, we also have... a new part of the facility, our LifeBridge area, which is a transitional care unit. So, for example, if you go in for, say, hip replacement surgery and need a place to get therapies and things like that, that is not quite home because you're possibly not strong enough yet to go home, but don't necessarily need to go to a long-term, you know, stay in a nursing home environment, you can be there for anywhere from one day to several weeks. Absolutely wonderful new area. It's very much, you know, set up very much almost like an apartment or a condo. All of our activities are open to those people as well.
Do you have a website for Bethany?
Yeah, BethanyLife.org, I believe, is our official website.
BethanyLife.org.
Yep, okay. Or you can give us a call. If you're anywhere up in the area, too, you can, you know, stop by and get a tour. It's a wonderful place. We're always working on new things to do, you know, new experiences. We are also on Facebook as well. If you look up Bethany Life on Facebook, you'll be able to see things as well.
Thank you, Molly Nagel, Bethany Life Communities, and your actually homegrown upstairs studio. And Maggie Westfold, thanks to you. Good job on your first local talk show.
Thank you.
And I've been your other co-host today, Paul Wearson. And we talked earlier with Mark Jackson, city planner and manager for Story City, about the many construction projects underway there and need for them, and the expected time frame for completion. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. You can also hear Local Talk anytime online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is also streaming live online at khoifm.org. Now, our theme music, as always, is backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, and if you like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. So come and see if you'll like to join our Local Talk team. If enjoying this show, please tell your friends, check us out on Facebook also, and please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. And now, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.